Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We shouldn't kid ourselves and think that there are not going to be some more very difficult decisions ahead. There will be. But at the same time, the vital signs of the city's economy remain strong.
The economy cycles up and down, but New York City goes on. The recessions of the mid-70s, late 80s to early 90s, and the early 2000s all left their mark, but were all followed by strong recoveries. Will the current banking and real estate crisis be any different? Maybe. Estimates are now that 40,000 Wall Street jobs, many of them six figures in salary, will vanish this year when all is said and done, with 120,000 total jobs lost, according to Governor Patterson, when other sectors feel the ripple effect. Some are questioning the model of Wall Street as we know it, while on the other side of town, thousands of New Yorkers are struggling with foreclosures from mortgages they couldn't really afford. This economic crisis now touches New Yorkers from the lowest to the highest socioeconomic rungs. But is the media hyping the pain? And for those affected, now what? Let's talk to Kathy Wild, president of the New York City Partnership. That's the Partnership for New York City, to be precise, the pro-business policy group. And Richmond McCoy, co-founder of Urban America, which invests largely in commercial and residential real estate in the urban core in New York and elsewhere. Kathy Wild, welcome back. And Richmond McCoy, welcome to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian, and hello, Richmond.
Thank you. Hi, Kathy. How are you today?
Good.
And I want to open the phones right away for a few groups of people to start out. If you have been laid off from Wall Street this year, if you are in that number that's heading toward 40,000, call us up. Tell us what happened to your company. Tell us what your plans are for yourself right now. And how about business students? Call us up. Are you rethinking your career? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. That funnel out of the MBA programs into places like Lehman and Merrill maybe isn't the given that you once expected it to be. What are your plans now if you're an MBA or other kind of business student? 212-433-WNYC or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Our phone number again for business students or if you've been laid off from Wall Street this year, 212-433-9692. Now, Kathy Wild, all these Wall Street jobs vanishing, and yet I've read this is not as many jobs as went away in the recession after the 1987 crash, which was like 360,000 total New York jobs, and the city bounced back from that. This, according to the number Governor Patterson was giving yesterday, would be only a third that total. So how do you put this moment in historical perspective?
Well, I think what's uncertain is how long this will last and whether or not the loss of jobs is just from the closing of firms or a restructuring of the industry, the securities industry, that will in fact result in sort of long-term that being less a contributor to our economy. And as you know, the financial services is about 25% of our economy, and securities is really the industry that over the last 25 years brought New York City to the forefront of the global economy. Wall Street made us the financial capital of the world. And as we've seen in the last couple of days, a lot of this stuff is psychology. The psychology is what's killing, you know, business in the marketplace and hurting the stock market. And so the psychology that surrounds New York City is also very important. So we've got to kind of think about it. There's the reality of the job losses, and then there is the psychology and the market impact of sort of our image getting bruised. And that's why having, you know, I mean, Mayor Bloomberg and Governor Patterson are both working hard to say, New Yorkers, let's keep our confidence up. Let's stand behind our institutions. Let's keep, you know, we can't accept this thing because we can bring about a far worse crisis than we need to face.
Well, there is all kinds of alarmist speculation out there today, and maybe it's all warranted. Things like Wall Street is rethinking its basic business model. This time the jobs may not come back. This is the straw that breaks the camel's back. I see all these quotes out in the papers today. But you heard Mayor Bloomberg's clip that we played at the top. How much of an epical shift are we witnessing, or is it just too early to know?
I think that everybody I've talked to in the industry agrees that there's going to be a shift in the industry, but the securities industry is only one component of the city's financial services industry, which, of course, includes insurance, but also we have the largest share of the international private equity business in New York City. We've got the largest number of billion-dollar-plus hedge funds. So we've got a huge asset management industry. We've got a diversified financial services industry. So a lot of the attention is on these high-profile security firms. In fact, our industry is much broader than that.
Joseph in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Joseph.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm about to actually go back to Queens College right now, where I'm taking many math courses as my math major.
Do I understand you have an MBA?
Actually, I have my BA from Farmingdale State College.
Uh-huh. In business? So did you have one career path, and now you're going to switch to something else?
Absolutely. I was working for Citigroup, and they let me go. And unfortunately, I was able to find another job, so now I'm going back to school to become a math teacher for high school.
That's a good thing, Joseph. Good luck to you. The world needs math teachers, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's terrific, actually. He's probably going to make a very important contribution to the growth of our economy as a math teacher.
That's right. Richmond McCoy, tell us more about your company. What do you own or finance here in New York?
Yeah, we're headquartered in New York. We haven't had made any investments in New York over the last few years. We were close to doing a condominium project 6 or 7 months ago, and we saw the market soften, and we backed away from that. But I wanted to tie into what the caller just had. Mm-hmm. And I think New York City is extremely well-positioned, as are many urban markets, but New York City is especially strong because of the foundational assets that we have there, one of which is the academic entities that we have here. And this to bring students from all over the world come to New York City. We also have a tremendous healthcare system, and obviously the mass transit is the best in the world. You couple that with an educated employee base, I think that's why we've been able to sustain ourselves through different economies. And our company does operate on a national basis, and New York has survived the longest in terms of the subprime and debt crisis. It's been able to withstand this crisis a lot better than other cities, but obviously it's come home to roost at this point. And I think some of the other damage that will show up in our economy will be all the vendors and related entities that service a lot of these fiscal companies. And that is yet to be seen, but ultimately I think New York will do just fine and will certainly recover, I think, better than other markets.
How about your company? How is the mortgage crisis and now the related banking crisis affecting urban America?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you, we have really slowed down our investment pace. We invest in existing office building and multifamily, retail, hospitality, and we buy them on behalf of our investors, and then we create value, and then we sell them. Our selling this year is down by 90%. We really haven't been able to sell any assets because people can't get the debt to finance them, and that's certainly across the board. There's been a huge decrease in activity, so it's affected a lot of the real estate brokerage firms and leasing companies as well. The activity just isn't there. And then in terms of buying properties, we have narrowed our focus simply to only pursue deals, existing income-producing properties that have existing debt that are on them already, because you can't go out and get any affordable debt in today's environment. So it has affected us that way. We've also recently downsized our company by some 25% because of the lack of pace, and to position ourselves to be able to continue to be strong through this crisis. And, you know, it's interesting, last year when this started, everyone was saying, well, after the summer it'll get better, after the new year it'll get better. And it is just continuing. And today we get news that AIG is in need of not the $20 billion that the governor, who's been very aggressive and intelligent and on the case, along with Mayor Bloomberg, said, look, we'll work with you to use some of the assets in your other entities, but turns out AIG says, well, we really need $75
billion. Wow, is that what they're saying now? I didn't hear that yet.
Yeah, that came out this morning. Otherwise, they're going to be heading the road of Lehman. And AIG is particularly threatening because, I mean, the big core of their business was they insured a lot of these mortgage pools. So, and they know that you can't, those mortgage pools, for the most part, many of them won't perform, and they won't be able to actually pay off on those. So it's very, you know, very scary times. I do think, as Kathy said, that I think it will ultimately be a smaller, more streamlined industry. And the investment banks historically weren't in the real estate business. That wasn't their game. But, you know, it was so attractive, and the fees they could make and working on these large mortgage pools were so attractive,
right,
they got into the business.
Right.
But now, all of a sudden, they have to be accountable for it, and they can't do it.
So before we go to another call, and I think we have an interesting one ready to go, who wants to say why the 1987 crash and recession was different from this.
Okay.
For you, Mr. McCoy, as a real estate person, how could so many in your business and in the related financial institutions and insurance companies have thought that so many subprime loans and investing in securities based on subprime loans and insuring these securities based on subprime loans? I mean, subprime loans by definition are subprime. And so to do that on such a large scale basis, how could so many people in your business have thought that this was good economics?
One word, greed. That really is really what fueled it. And the reality is, you talk about the subprime, many of these mortgages that were written that are not performing weren't for the low to moderate income homeowner.
Mm-hmm.
It was an abuse of the lack of oversight and doing the verification of a person's income, the stated incomes. And the piggyback mortgages, where people of middle and upper income range were able to get into mortgages with 3, 5, 10% down in what everyone hoped to be an ever-escalating home appreciation game. And then when that didn't work and they stopped performing, that's what really caused this crisis.
Kathy Wild, greed, denial, hubris. I've seen all these words out there. This is why this really happened. It's all of those things?
I think it's all of those things, but it's also, we were caught up in a psychology of an inflation in values that everybody benefited from. As you know, the proceeds of these mortgage deals have created billions of dollars in Wall Street bonuses that have in turn translated into providing extra money for tax revenues for our school system. I mean, we've all benefited from thinking positively that home prices, home values, real estate values were going to continue to go up. So we're all culprits, and
sure,
we've all enjoyed the benefit of the of a boom.
Right.
Economy. Booms come to an end is the little lesson.
That's
here.
Right. Even though I know, you know, plenty of people in real estate, in the real estate business, Mr. McCoy, and for years after, even in the late 90s, never mind after 2001, they would say, well, this can't last.
Right.
This can't last. And yet everybody was investing as if it was going to last. Raymond in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. The 1987 financial crisis was a V-shaped drop. It did not affect the real economy.
I gather you're a retired economics professor
from Queens College.
Okay.
Yes. And this one, on the contrary, has spread to the real economy.
How do you know?
Well, because of the consequences of the decline in demand. First place, there's been an asset meltdown that has been mentioned in the
financial right. Well, that one spread to the real economy, too. We lost over 300,000 jobs in New York City.
That's what happens when you lose jobs, you lose the demand for real goods and services, which feeds back into an unemployment increase, which then leads back to a further decrease in asset values.
Right.
And so there's a kind of vicious downward circle. And this is not news. I think it is, the stock market is has a psychological component, but not only, but the real economy, when that spreads to the real economy, that's not a psychological phenomenon. Real incomes go down. Demand for goods and services
yes.
go down. If people lose their home, they don't then
right.
Buy the kinds of refrigerators and furniture and whatever they buy to nurture their home.
Right. So I'm going to leave it there and get some other people on. I'm not sure you've made the case that the ripple effect is so different this time from 1987 when more than 300,000 jobs were lost. Will this be a V ultimately like that was? I guess time will tell. But Michael in Harlem, you're on WNYC. Hi, Michael.
Yes. Good morning. In my column in the Black Star News, I've written that for Harlem and for other communities like the Lower East Side, that this is a wonderful thing, that this will perhaps begin to cool the exuberant investment that's displacing people and will mitigate this public policy that has converged to favor luxury housing and to favor investment in and encouragement of projects like Columbia's expansion in Manhattanville with this monolithic biotech research laboratory that so contrasts.
I don't want to get off. And Michael, I'm going to take the first part of your question. I know you're against the Manhattanville project, and we have an Atlantic Yards opponent on another line who wants to tie it
right.
into that. But the you know the initial point that he makes, and Richmond McCoy from Urban America, I'll throw this to you.
Yeah.
Is it – well, the subprime wave was considered good for a long time, partly because it got a lot of poor people into home ownership. There was some of the pressure to look the other way at Fannie and Freddie's books because of that. So more working class Americans could afford their own homes in Harlem and elsewhere. Do we learn from this crisis that the American dream of home ownership has to be more out of reach for more people in order to have a financially responsible economic system? Or might we see, as Michael suggests, the price of homes become more affordable again because of the bubble bursting, and that might actually benefit a lot of ordinary New Yorkers?
Oh, three questions you asked me.
pick your favorite.
Oh, okay. I think that the I think it's been terrific that many people who heretofore were not able to acquire homes have been able to, and many of those folks are continuing to perform according to the mortgage commitments that they made. I think the FHA has continued to have an affordable product. I think that will continue to be there. I think it's important for first-time home buyers to get into the American dreams, so to speak. But it was not properly, the oversight wasn't there, and there were certainly many people were put into situations that they couldn't perform at. I do think there certainly is going to be values now in many communities. There will be a reduction in cost to acquire homes, so I think that's good. It's a cooling off period. One of the aspects that is happening is a lot of the government subsidized projects will not happen now, where they were getting large government subsidies to finance major real estate projects because the states can no longer sell the bonds because they can't accurately predict that the real estate will perform and the taxes to pay off those bonds will be there. So we're seeing a dramatic decrease in publicly subsidized projects, and that will certainly slow down some of these large master plan communities that, frankly, can't get done without some large public subsidy.
Would that affect Columbia's Manhattanville or Atlantic Yards in Brooklyn?
I think Atlantic Yards it will, because there was a big subsidy there. Columbia, as we all know, is extremely well endowed, and I think they'll continue, and I think they have made some good efforts mm-hmm. to reach out and do some things in the community, and hopefully there'll be more of that in terms of partnership.
Kathy Wild, anything on that? I mean, I know Mayor Bloomberg always unambiguously says rising home prices have been good for New York because it shows that the world is bullish on New York. Might it be a little more ambiguous than that?
Well, I think that we have a cooling off period in real estate markets is always helpful to adjust and stabilize those markets. And we had a boom. We've had a lot of pressure without enough production of housing. The idea of then saying that that somehow a benefit of this will be that it will stop the next generation of big housing production programs because it's bringing new housing online that is the natural control in the market. What you don't want is a market that cools because people lose their jobs and our economy tanks. That's the worst possible scenario. So what's very important now is that projects that are going to develop significant new inventories of affordable housing and are going to produce jobs, they're more important than ever before. So I think whether it's Atlantic Yard or Columbia's $6 billion investment in job-generating and educational facilities in Manhattanville. This is activity that we need to be able to make sure, again, that while the cooling of the real estate market does not translate into what your earlier economist caller was talking about was a long-term economic decline.
Mm-hmm.
The cycles, the ups and downs, the V-shaped curves, we know we're comfortable, we can absorb, and that's a healthy thing for our economy long-term. But if it starts to really go down, if we really start to restructure, if we see chronic lots of jobs that don't come back, that's a problem.
Stuart in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Stuart.
Hi. I keep hearing the same comment that home ownership rates have increased, you know, due to all the activity. But when I look at the statistics, I don't see that at all. I only see a small percentage increase going back two decades. We're still somewhere between, 65-70% of home ownership. So I don't think all this Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and all these programs have really done what people keep thinking they've done.
Kathy Wild, do you know?
Well, obviously they actually have increased quite a bit in New York City from the mid-20s to the mid-30s over the past 25, 30 years. Nationally, they've been modest increases, but what's happened is that there has been much more access to home ownership as a result of Fannie and Freddie making reducing the size of down payments. I mean, when I started in the late 60s, early 70s, in terms of working on affordable housing, you had to have 20% cash to get Fannie Mae to buy your mortgage, and they didn't count the rental income that an owner got from a two or three family house. Home ownership was totally inaccessible to most people in New York City, and that's why we had such a low rate of home ownership.
Richmond McCoy, same question. This is your business.
Yes, I think the gentleman's comment is not taking into consideration the increase in the population. So if you look at that, I think Kathy's comment is right on. I know literally hundreds of people who heretofore, before the last 3 to 5 years, could never have gotten into a home. So they've been able to create some equity and create some generational wealth, which has allowed them to send their children to school and go forward and really bring up a large class of people who really had no hope whatsoever. And I do think those programs will continue under a much more oversight, and that's a very good thing. We have to have a significant long-term strategy to have affordable housing in New York City for people who work for the government, the police officers, the firemen, the nurses, the school teachers, and others, so they can actually be able to, live in New York City to work there. So I think it's a critical component for our city, and most cities around the country are really struggling with this.
We're just about out of time. We're going to go next to Daniel Gross from Slate.com and Newsweek on the implications of this for the presidential race. We have clips of McCain and Obama from yesterday, including McCain having to backtrack from something he says on the stump a lot. We'll play that clip. But before you go, Kathy Wild, I saw a quote that this crisis may have flipped you from being an opponent of ending term limits, so Mayor Bloomberg could run again, to perhaps support her because his leadership would be important. What is your position?
Well, I haven't taken a position one way or another. I think that there's over the weekend, and my comment was sort of offhand, you know, over the weekend, you were glad you had Mayor Bloomberg there, who was on the phone with Secretary Paulson and with the people that were working on this crisis and making sure that that there was not a business panic in the city and that everybody was working together. Having a mayor at this point in time who understands international markets and knows the players so well comes out of that international business world is obviously a big advantage to New York City. It's, you know, London has a former media newscaster, so I think we're in good shape in Mayor Bloomberg's hands. And it did make you take pause that hopefully he can get us out of this crisis as he did after the economic crisis we faced 9/11.
Yes,
but you're not taking a position on term limits.
No, I'm not until the mayor does, certainly.
Which he hasn't quite yet. He is considering it. All right. And also still to come, we'll talk about whether the potential collapse of AIG might actually pose a much bigger threat to the economy than collapse of Lehman Brothers. Some people think it will. But for now, I want to thank Kathy Wild, President and CEO of the Partnership for New York City, and Richmond McCoy, CEO of Urban America, the investment firm specializing in low-income urban areas. Thank you both very, very much.
Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And we will talk to Daniel Gross from Slate.com and Newsweek in a minute and play those Obama and McCain clips. Stay with us.